You're listening to Marcus Sahaba Online Radio Podcast.
Better and better. We started off with our good friend. What was his name? Yeah. Ibrahim Ba, I'm pulling your leg. His name was Abu Bakr. See that? And he did most of you. We got to Anwar Qasim, who did drive in with Anwar. And then Maulana Salim Karim had a lovely topic with us talking about those parents that spoil the youngsters, you know, and what the youngsters do is another story. But then on Travel Express, we join one of our best, our very own Ibrahim Badacha, my Ibrahim Ba. And Ibrahim Ba, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And tell me, how are you doing this beautiful evening? And you are the busiest man on earth, Ibrahim Ba. Tell me, how are you doing?
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh to you, first of all, brother Shafat, and of course our listeners to Radio Markaz Sahaba. Alhamdulillah, I'm in good spirits and looking forward to your program, as always.
Yeah, always, you know, great to have you, great chat with you, wholesome chat with our very own Ibrahim Ba. And, you know, looking at, you know, how we've come through, and I was just the other day sitting there and thinking, you know, here I've got Ibrahim Badacha, my Ibrahim Ba. Then I had in my broadcasting career, starting off with a legend one day. I'll share the story with you, Ibrahim Ba.
Yeah, yeah.
Mufti A.K. Hussain told Ibrahim Gengat Rahimullah to phone me. So I remember that day very distinctly. I was at the workshop with one of my friends. They, you know, this curio shop they had. It was Ibrahim, one of these Ibrahim's brothers. And then I get a call, and I took the call. I said, hello, is that Uncle, Assalamu alaikum, Uncle Shafat? I said, yes, Uncle Shafat. I remember Ibrahim is my senior, right?
Mm-hmm.
I said, yes, Uncle. I'm wondering, okay. I said, yeah, Uncle Shafat, yeah. I must have been 40-something then. And then he said, okay, Mufti AK asked me to call you. There's a slot that we have, a comparative religion. Can you handle that? And I laughed because that's my forte, you know. I mean, being under DDAT, I've mastered that thing and all that. I said, yes, yes, we will try. And that's how it started, you know. It started in Ramadan and, you know, it went through. Subsequently, we started with Farooq Khan, the journalist, in 94.
Yes, yes.
You remember he had that Radio Jummah. Blessings of Maulana Abdul Razak, Rahimullah, and all that. But subsequently, that's how it started and how Allah made it. That within a short span of time, Ibrahim and I became the best of friends. The best of friends. And, you know, the rest is history. But that's how I started Ibrahim Ba with him. And Mufti A.K. Hussain's Barakah still resonates. Here you are with me on Markaz Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah. And once again, captained by Mufti A.K. Hussain Zamud Barakatum. Ibrahim Ba, as we look at so many things happening, but we look at now, we're flying at Cape Town International, and Cape Town International Airport has recorded over 4.35 million domestic travelers this year. Hey, is that a lot of figures, Ibrahim Ba?
Well, in a South African, in a South African context, I dare say it is. I mean, 4.35 million, that's two ways. So if you're flying in and flying out, even though it's just one journey or one passenger, they're taking it both ways, so to speak. But having said that, that in its own right, you know, for a, 10-month, 11-month period, we, just started November now. I think that's phenomenal, given the fact that we were in the doldrums a few years ago. And that figure represents a recovery of 71% for the year to date now. That's not something to be sniffed at, you know. And this compares to the same period in 2019. So good on Cape Town and everybody in charge of Western Cape Tourism and things like that for doing a sterling job to, how shall I say, initiate and spur this recovery in travel. It can only but augur well for the province. Just as an indication, in September of this year, they recorded that CTIA, which is short for Cape Town International Airport, 486,000 two-way domestic and 152,000 international travelers passed through the airport. And that is representing recovery rates in the region of 66 and 81%. respectively. Now, that's quite phenomenal given the circumstances that we find the industry in. And this, again, being compared with the same month in 2019. Of course, they still have a way to go, and I think they will at some stage surpass the pre-pandemic tourism figures if they continue to doing the right thing, which they are obviously, and, you know, giving the level of service. As you recall, in previous Travel Express shows, we did discuss the fact that they had won best airport in Africa, et cetera, I think 5-6 years running. So obviously they have a recipe for success, and I'm glad that they are able to swing it, unlike other places like ourselves here in KZN and elsewhere in the north. I mean, there are some people that are in charge of tourism that shouldn't, in fact, really be there, but such is life. And they have been very innovative, Pa, insofar as, you know, we talk often of the digital nomad visa and thing in other countries. They call it the remote working visa and things like that. And they are doing their best to sort of, how shall I say, facilitate and fast track, you know, ways and means to make it possible for visitors to come in by cutting the red tape as far as possible. Now, just some figures for the record. As I said, the domestic terminal recovery was at 66% in September. And passengers through George Airport, which is very, very popular, you know, the Garden Route area, that recovered to 86% when compared to September 2019. So that is exceptional, really, and well done to them. On the international front, Europe regained its position at the Cape, Western Cape's top region for tourist arrivals, with 6 out of every 10 source markets to Cape Town originating from Europe itself. And the top 5 highest year-on-year growth in September, I'm talking about purely about attractions. And I see the Table Mountain National Park, and that has various facets to it, from the boulders and the National Park, Cape of Good Hope, Aerial Cableway, and the Shipwreck Museum, and, of course, the Nizhna National Park. Get this, Brother Shafat. The lowest was 140% and going to a high of 176%. Now, that just goes to show if you run your attractions right, you can swing things around rather quickly. And all I can say is more of the same and more strength to their arm. Good luck to them with whatever they are doing and bringing more people into the country, because it is a proven fact that in this day and age, nothing matches tourism, travel and tourism insofar as spending money for any destination you care to name.
Ibrahim Ba, brilliant, brilliant indeed. And in other words, you know, listening to you very intently and very carefully, incompetence breeds a disaster. You got the competent people, they will breed the success and more success, and everything goes smoothly. And in Cape Town, you know, perhaps looking at the demographics of the region, you know, you have more of our Malay brothers there, and predominantly, you know, Khoi population, and you got some smattering of the Yahudis there, and the Englishmen and the Buros all mixed in there. And delivering, Ibrahim, the point I'm making, you're looking at our region of Itikweni, and the demographics, you know what it is.
We're
not sounding racist here, but we're speaking facts. And from the demographics that we have incompetent people that have been put into position of power, you know, in the municipality. And nearly every second, you know, segment or, you know, entity is a failure, is a disaster. And then they say, oh, yes, we made cadre deployment, and they're killing each other. They're fighting each other. It's all about, you know, looting and booting each other at the expense of a beautiful product called Durban, Ibrahim Ba.
Absolutely, Brother Shafat. You know, I second what you say. And unfortunately, you know, the thing is, this leads into our next, you know, point of discussion. The thing is, you know, how shall I put it? The results are so glaringly obvious. And I don't think for 1 minute, whilst Cape Town has got a lot going for it, the thing is, who is running the operations? Who's running the machine, right, that matters more than anything else. Because, I mean, if you compare KZN, Durban, the coast and everything, we've got better weather, we've got better beaches, we've got a whole lot of things going for us. But do we have the right people at the helm of KZN or Durban Tourism for that matter? That, I think, is the critical question. And the fact that we have lost something like 82%+ of arrivals into KZN and Durban itself speaks for itself. It speaks volumes. I mean, yeah, they're hitting the high notes with 100%, 160% and all that sort of thing coming back in. And we are losing 82%. Now, what do we do with that paltry balance that is left? You know, I don't understand it. And the thing is, they can sit and be in denial for all they're worth. And they can sit and say that, yes, it's changing for the better, but it isn't. I mean, the statistics and the facts are speaking for themselves. So unless and until, you know, they take stock of everything and put the right kind of people, and I'm not saying there isn't. There is a huge number of people that are suitably qualified to turn things around. The question is, will they give them even a look in? That is the problem, you know, and Durban, having things like Durban Rocks and this nonsense and that other sort of party where they just make a whole lot of noise, everyone gets drunk and create mayhem. That's not the way to go. But there, lo and behold, that's what it is. And this is why we are suffering over here insofar as raising our tourism numbers. And just to add insult to injury now, the festive season is fast approaching. And of course, it's a race against the clock whether we're going to have our beaches reopened, you know, to attract the kind of visitors that we should. And just to give you an indication, more than 50 beaches across South Africa will be flying blue flags for the next year in recognition of their sparkling clean seawater and other features of excellence. Now, sadly, not a single beach in Durban will be among them for at least another 12 months. Now, if that is not patently clear enough for those that are supposedly in charge of operations in the tourism and travel sector, then I don't know what is. And during the forthcoming 22-23 season, 51 beaches, 4 marinas, and 2 tourism boats in South Africa will have blue flag status because they have successfully demonstrated their ability to meet the criteria set by the environment control that's based somewhere in Scandinavia. I think it's Norway or Sweden or somewhere. They do that. And, of course, there is a local body in South Africa that inspects and grants it. Now, you will recall that in September, a number of our beaches were closed after tests revealed the shocking, I'm not going to say poor, shocking water quality at those beaches. And unfortunately, 8 of those beaches still remain closed ahead of the city's peak visitor period. And these beaches include Westbrook, Bronze, Laguna, Tequini, Umhlanga, Umhloti, and Umgababa beaches. However, in a statement released by the municipality yesterday, apparently 13 beaches have been reopened for swimming. And these are the Shaka, Ushaka Beach, Addington, Wedge, North, Bay of Plenty, Battery Beach, Country Club, Brighton, Reunion, Pipeline, Toti, Main, and Warner Beaches. These have been reopened after, and get this, after tests conducted by experts. Now, I'm putting those experts in italics. And listen, they found that the level of E. coli was at acceptable standards. Get that? For recreational activities. Now, if too suddenly good. Our people that go to the beach start getting horribly sick, then we know that's a whole lot of hogwash, right? But we're taking it at face value, and we just hope and pray that it is what it is and that they are being, truthful to us. Now, the city is expecting to attract anything between 900,000 to a million visitors this festive season. And this, of course, always boosts the city's coffers. And this on the back of the pandemic, as we call it, and last July's unrest and the floods we had this year. And we are hoping, you know, that some sanity prevails insofar as the provision of services go, that we can entice and lure all those people from upcountry and that might consider going elsewhere to come down to Durban instead. Now, just as an aside, last week, our mayor revealed that while water and sanitation infrastructure had been damaged during the floods, he is blaming vandalism, and he could be right, I'm not saying no. He blames vandalism to be at the core of the failure of the sewage pump stations. And he stated that to date, 33 of our stations have been vandalized. Now, that's a huge number. And, of course, blaming that for the pollution of our rivers and beaches. But he's happy that great progress is made insofar as repairing critical infrastructure. And, of course, they'll keep the public members of the public posted as and when and abreast of new developments as they happen. So they are asking for everyone's understanding and cooperation in the end. That's where we are at, Brother Shafaq. Sad situation, but it's a reality. It is what it is, and we just got to face the music.
Well, Ibrahim, talk about the blue flag status. Yeah, filth all over. So that's a stated goal. What about our roads and what about our suburbs where you find these individuals coming and urinating and defecating and doing what they love to do? They do. And they will even bully you, and they'll drink, and they'll scream at the loudest voice at midnight too, if they feel like it. I don't know where they get the sound system. They will blast it right in front of you with impunity. What blue flag? I don't know. We are surrounded with, I don't know what color flag. Allahu Alam.
Black ones.
Yeah, worse, terrible, Ibrahim Ba. But this is what South Africa is. This is what I don't know. I think Durban, even Johannesburg, they call it a dustbin. We've got a title of being the dustbin of Africa, Ibrahim. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, certainly. And the thing is, this phenomena didn't happen overnight, right? And I think we must lay the blame pure, straight and clear at the feet of the ruling ANC party. And they have, I don't know, in their mind and their hearts, I don't know whether the thought occurs to them at all, is that everything will run on its own. There will be no need for education, no need for maintenance, no need for competent people with the skill sets to do what they need to do. And this, of course, doesn't work. You know, you've got to be keeping your hand at the tiller all the time to make sure that you're going in the right direction. And just as an aside, I just saw a post came in on the WhatsApp that there is an article alluding to the fact that wasteful use of city funds, a charge has been laid. When I say a charge, they cited that and said that the mayor is not fit to be in position to control those funds. I haven't read the full text of it, but it is indicative of the fact that what you said earlier, that incompetence and cadre deployment prevails. And this is the root cause of everything. Of course, changing the mentality of a society, a community, it's not something that happens overnight. You've got to get it going from grassroots level. If maybe in a generation's time, which is normally around 20 years, that you might hopefully, if you're doing things right consistently, that you might necessarily, you might somehow see the benefit and the fruits of your labor. But of course, if one looks at our parliament, there are more, how shall I say, crooks and thieves and criminals of sort in the parliamentary sort of role. And if they are setting that kind of example, what do you think the guy in the street is going to do? You say, well, if my president can do this, then my parliamentary candidate can do that, and my ward councillor can do this and that and the other. So they'll do the same. And yeah, it is, how shall I say, it is resorting to almost, levels that can be, hard to describe, that a human being can be seen to conduct themselves in that manner that you spoke about earlier, getting drunk and passing out and puking all over the place, urinating on themselves and defecating all over the place. I mean, even animals don't do that, for God's sake, and it's beyond me. It's beyond me, truly, because I see this every day. I see it every day. And try as you may, you cannot get them to understand or appreciate that there is a nicer, better way to live life. Yeah, things are tough. Things are tough globally, right? But the thing is, ultimately, if you are not going to be the one, they say change starts with you. If you're not going to be the one that's going to initiate that positive change, to A, either keep your area clean or do whatever needs to be done to enhance the quality of your life or the environment in which you live in. Don't expect somebody else to come and do it for you. I mean, the local government affairs, the municipality per se, doesn't have the wherewithal, either in the, how shall I say, material, final, financial and human and other resources to even keep our lights on or the water running or fixing potholes like you spoke about. So I think the only way out is we've got to get, how shall I say, critical mass insofar as we have people that are genuinely concerned and believe that there is still some hope in turning the fortunes of this province, city, and of course, hopefully the region and country around, to find some common ground. Because whether we like it or not, Brother Shafak, we still have to deal with the municipality, with local government, or whatever the case may be. And we cannot go and now suddenly do this, that, or the other with the municipality or the city's infrastructure without their cooperation and permission. So I think this is what we should do, is remain positive. I know a lot of people say, Ibrahim, I think you're being crazy and being overly optimistic. But on the other hand, what choices do we have? We've got no choice. So make the best of a bad situation and take it one day at a time, one step at a time. And you can affect positive changes in small pockets that can be grown, share and, you know, support each other, you know, make contiguous boundaries as you go from community to community and expand that circle of excellence. And before long, you'll find people, you know, wanting to join and doing the same thing. And then suddenly you see, wow, there's a shining light over there. What's happening? People are doing things differently. Let's go and find out. And so you can spread the goodwill and, of course, the improvement around. But it's critical that, you know, we cannot be seen to be throwing stones at the municipality, because they won't take kindly to that, firstly, whether we're right or wrong or whatever. But I think cooperation is still going to be the way going forward.
You know, Ibrahim, whilst you're talking and you brought in the issues of look at our parliament and we got individuals that are charlatans, that are, you know, proven, it's been proven that they have taken all these monies and so forth, but they still sit there comfortably, or, you know, the step aside situation comes in, or they're suspended with full pay. But listen to this, Ibrahim Ba, I want you to comment on it. This, it's a short article. It says a one-time senior SAPS official says she was recently targeted by a hitman after the whistleblower threatened to go public with some damning information about corruption within the police force. Her purported evidence implicates, listen to this, Ibrahim Ba, Cyril Ramaphosa and Becky Cele. SAPS, a whistleblower, accused government of trying to kill her. Patricia Morgan Mashele claims to be sitting on a number of explosive bombshells. According to the whistleblower, two high-ranking cops, including a serving general, are actually foreign nationals. That is, in her words, is a tip of the iceberg of a very corrupt iceberg. Ibrahim Ba, can it get worse?
I'm not sure. I think we're very much near rock bottom already. I mean, if the justice system has been, how shall I say, perverted to the point that there is no real justice because of the delays in getting so-called justice, the legal system is there. It works to a fashion or the other. But I feel for that lady, whoever she might be, and I just hope she stays healthy and stays safe and stays alive and not be suicided or murdered or have become an unfortunate victim of an accident or something like that that was arranged by you know who. This is not uncommon. At least here still the, how shall I say, the whistleblowers still have a chance of sorts. If you're looking internationally, if you're looking to the U.S., for instance, you're dead meat, my friend, one way or the other. The thing is, they will reward the criminals, right, and punish the whistleblowers. And this is seen. I mean, if you look at Julian Assange and all the rest of them and other whistleblowers that get hefty sentences that are uncalled for, unwarranted and undeserved, when the real crooks should be put in jail. But given the fact that we are living in a world gone crazy and where all the values are inverted, where morals no longer exist, you know, in a manner that you can consider it either in order with the divine will or in a civilized manner, then these things will come to pass. And I just feel very seriously for this woman's safety. And I doubt very much that those bombshells that she's talking about, unless and until the incontrovertible proof is made public. And even then, it's a big fat if anyone will see jail time or be fired from their posts or anything of the sort. And someone made a comment just yesterday in discussion of the, how shall I say, there is no law, there is no order as such that we can talk about, that's normal. They said that, look, as far as they are concerned, and this is what they said in the discussion, that the SAPs can be seen to be akin to one of the many criminal syndicates that is leading to the destruction of this country. Now, what you're saying ties in perfectly with what was said at a separate meeting somewhere else, totally unrelated, but coming to the same conclusion. So dark days ahead, definitely, Brother Shafat, and unless and until you get someone that is honest and just at the helm, that's going to root out all this corruption, and it's going to take forever because it's so deeply ingrained, you know, in society that we live in. I don't see any way out of it. I mean, it's just going to get worse and worse, and so much so that you can't even open your mouth. If you've got sensitive information, you consider the chances of yourself being a whistleblower and getting taken out, where you share it with some high-level general or the other, and he's part of the criminal enterprise. So what do you do at the end of the day, Brother Shafat? Very, very difficult situation.
Absolutely, Ibrahim Bhai, and look at our time. We've already gone to 27 minutes. I mean, alhamdulillah, brilliant discussion with you. We have so many things to talk about. But the barakah flows when you come on Travel Express, Ibrahim Bhai. Perhaps your parting words this evening?
My parting words. I mean, there's been so much of doom and gloom going on around us. You know, all I can say is, there is a saying. It says, attract what you expect, reflect what you desire, become what you respect, and mirror that what you admire. So I'll leave you with that thought. And of course, a very hearty assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh to you, of course, Brother Shafat, and all our listeners to Radio Markaz Sahaba. Thank you for the opportunity.
You're most welcome, Ibrahim Bhai, and wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Really enjoyed that parting words of Ibrahim Bhai. People, keep it locked on to Markaz Sahaba for beautiful programming. And I'd like to thank Alukalo for great engineering. From the team tonight, till we meet you again, we bid you. Assalamu alaikum. ورحمة الله وبركاته